Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Out of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host Devin.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Devin. And we are joined by two special guests today, Dennis Tyrell from Tyrell Knifeworks and Chad Kimmel from Summit and C. Smithing. What's going on, guys?
Hey, good to be here.
Yeah, man, happy to be here. It's hot. Awesome. It's hot out here in Texas, but we're in the AC right now.
It's hot up here in Maryland, too. No joke. Cool. All right, Devin, what do you got for us today?
The universe never explains why. Pulled that again from my Rick Rubin book. Who knew he was so insightful? It is like a book of crazy quotes. But anyway, just what we're discussing today. Some things don't need to be explained, and some things don't have a good rhyme or reason for why they happen. But you just kind of move on, see what you can do to help, and that's the thing. You got to just always see where, if there's a space where you can squeeze it in and try to help. Not everything. The universe isn't going to lay it out for you, right?
Yeah, and that's, I think, like, that quote is, it's really good because it's, you know, the universe doesn't explain anything. Like, things happen, and it's just up to each person individually, who, and everyone's perspective is different, so it's up to each person individually to, like, go move along and, you know, continue with what you're doing, or continue with what your own reaction to what happens around you. I mean, I think of, like, that today. I was working on gluing up some of the sheep shear knives I'm working on, and one of the handles, when I was putting it in, it was like a little crooked, so I just took it over to my vise and I put a, you know, a pair of pliers on it, and I went to just tweak it just a little bit, like a maybe a 32nd, maybe even less than that, just to get it a little bit more in line. And just that little bit of tweak, and it just, the blade snapped right off of the shear handle. Mm-hmm. And like,
that's
in that moment. Yeah, right. I was just like, you know, like, and I mean, fortunately, I guess in my mind, I was like, okay, well, I have, you know, 10 other knives here. I'm doing a big batch, so, you know, it's not all my eggs in one basket. You know, and then I was like, okay, well, now what do I do? I have this handle that's fit specifically for this one. And so I started looking at it, and I was like, well, I could kind of grind down and make a little paring knife. And then I kind of mentioned that to my wife, and she was like, oh, that's really nice. And she started thinking about the size of it and all. So again, it's like, the universe never explains why. It's just our own way to move forward, I guess. Like, how do you choose its perspective?
For sure. And I think perspective drives a lot of that, right? So, like, you can look at that one of two ways. Oh, damn, my blade broke. I look at it as a really positive thing, because you hardly tweaked it at all. What if a customer did that?
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the last thing that I want, is to put that in a customer's hand. They tweak it a little bit and snap the blade, and now, you know, now you have work out there that's snapping in customers' hands. So I'd much rather it snap, like, with me than, right. So I think it's all perspective. And when you, you know, I mean, the additive, life gives you lemons, make lemonade kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
you can look at it as a really negative thing, or you can turn around to something positive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we all, everyone is, I think, innately selfish, right? Obviously we're trying to preserve ourselves so we stay alive. So, like, you have to. But everyone is taking in what's happening around them completely different. You know, like, the way I see something is going to be something different. Even if we're all in the same area doing the same thing, everyone sees something differently. Like we mentioned right before we started, I was like, hey, Chad, I'm Dustin. You know, we hadn't really met formally, although we, like, sat down at a big table together and had dinner around the same table, but, you know, our paths didn't really cross all that much. So like, you know, our own perspectives on that situation may be completely different. And, you know, I think just that's a cool thing that people don't think about often. They're very self-centered, but in the way that, like, you know, you need to think about how do you react to things happening around you, especially as makers. You know, there's always, you know, one of the things we do, we always have like disasters and things, and people always make mistakes, and it's just how you move forward. And like you said, like, you'd rather that mistake happen where you can figure out how to fix it before it goes out to someone who might not, you know, might not appreciate they're getting a knife that snapped in their hand, you know, or like they just try to move something a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I completely agree.
Yeah. Just for the listeners, we do have Dennis here with us. He's having a little trouble with his technical stuff, but we're just going to keep on going. And Dennis, if everything sounds okay to you, I was recording okay earlier, so we'll keep going. And if it's kind of funky, you can always pop out and pop back in. We'll just keep recording.
Yeah, keep going. I think it's just glitching once in a while for me. But.
Gotcha. Yeah. All right. So again, we have Dennis Tyrell from Tyrell Knifeworks. Dennis has a successful YouTube channel and does amazing knives. And then we have Chad Kimmel here from Summit and C Smithing, and Chad as well does some beautiful knives, beautiful Damascus. You guys have collaborated to make a really cool project. So, Chad, you want to start us off by telling us a little bit about the project and like kind of the general idea, and then we can go into the details of it.
Sure, absolutely. So, I'll start a little bit from the beginning. So, inside the knife maker community, we've got just some really, really great people, and sometimes when you meet some of these people, you know, kind of stars align. And I moved out to California in kind of a bad situation, and I reached out onto a Facebook forum, and that's how Dennis and I met, because I didn't have a shop to work out of, and Dennis was like, yeah, sure, drive up to my place and use my shop, like out of nowhere, just a complete stranger, a random act of kindness, and that's kind of how our paths crossed to begin with, and so we've kind of been friends since then. But essentially, Project 22 is... something that came about from Project 22 is an existing charity, right? So what it is 22 veterans lose their lives every day to suicide. So we wanted to, somebody in our community was affected by this, Bob Rankin. His son, who was in the Navy for 8.5 years, got out for about 1.5 months and took his own life. It happened like a week before Blade Show. And so this is us trying to support our friend and his family. And, you know, sometimes bad things happen and there's not a good reason why, and there's not, you know, anything that we can do to change it. And so we kind of come together as community, and sometimes the stars align and you're able to do these incredible projects.
Yeah. And right off the bat, where, if people want to help the situation, what can they do, and where can they go?
Sure, great question. So go to BobRankinCustomKnives.com, and then go into his store. He's got these stickers up that are, it says Robert Adam Rankin on it, and they're a little collaborative sticker that we made. Anybody knows Rocco Handmade, he's kind of a tatted up guy. He's a really, really cool guy, but he got one of his tattoo friends to make some stickers. So if you go buy a sticker costs $25. Buy as many as you want. Buy some for friends, buy some from family, you know, stick them wherever you want, stick them in the shop, stick them on a stop sign, I don't care. But every sticker that you buy is going to enter you for a chance to win this knife. So if you buy 5 stickers, you get 5 chances to win. It's for the set, and we made some pretty special Damascus. We'll get into that in here a little bit.
And where is the money going?
So all of the money is going to go help Bob in some of the economic hardships that happen when you have a family member unexpectedly die. They had to move, and they had to, you know, there's just kind of a lot of things like that going on. And so then I know Bob's going to donate the rest to a veteran organization. Warriors Way is kind of what we're looking at. But there's a couple of really good ones that his son really liked too. So we're gonna look at some of that as well.
Nice. Do you know, I don't know if this is more personal than we want to get, but do you have any insight on like what happened with his son? Like, I mean, other than the fact that he committed suicide, but was there like warning? Did you know, like, I feel that's, like, maybe this is a man thing, you know, like, I want to be able to like, how do you fix this? Was there any like heads up? Like, do you know anything about that?
It's such a good question. And the answer is no. So yeah, okay. it rarely manifests, man. And we'll get into a little bit of this later, but you know, talking to Bob, he you know, his son went grocery shopping that afternoon. He was gonna cook dinner the next day. Yeah. 45 minutes before it happened, his son was downstairs talking to his mom. He was, you know, smoking and joking, not actually smoking, but he was, you know, smoking and joking, talking to his mom, texting his sister who just left for, she went to vacation in Florida. And so he's texting his sister. They've got a really close relationship. You know, him and his mom have a really close relationship. And then, you know, 45 minutes later, it's done.
Wow, man. That's so scary. That's so out of anyone's control. You know what I mean? Obviously it was even out of his control. It seems like it, like, and that's
for
like,
sure.
Phew, that's tough.
Yeah, and you know, something that we always say, it's a permanent solution to temporary problems, and that's
right.
You know, it's a hard thing to go through, but it's, you know.
Yeah, that's tough. So we want to go a little bit into like the background, so like how you guys got into this, and then like, you know, the details of what the whole project, where everything came from, because I know there's some really cool like materials that went into it, and cool collaborations along the way. So Chad, do you want to tell us a little bit about how like it originated, and you know,
how you guys absolutely started? So I'll start out by where I started knife making in Shreveport, Louisiana. My mentor's name was Dan Graves. Dan has been doing it so long, his website is theknifemaker.com.
Nice.
And Dan's just kind of a good old boy who opens a shop up to strangers to come by a shop on Saturdays. You pay $50 for the day, and you get to use the shop, and he stands over your shoulder and waits till you've already made a mistake and tells you you did it wrong. No, Dan's a good guy, but Dan was put in a really cool situation. Somebody reached out to him, one of the cutters off the line at 9/11. So for those of you who don't know, first responders are in trying to pull out people from the wreckage of 9/11. These cutters came in behind them, and when they needed somebody cut out, they would go in and they would cut steel beams. So they've got these massive saws made to cut metal. Well, a lot of times these guys are sitting around, right? They're not, when I say they're not doing anything, there's nothing, you know, they're waiting to do something.
They're waiting to be called upon, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Yep. And so families are waiting to see if their loved ones are in there. And so what they're doing is they're cutting out Episcopalian crosses out of some of the steel with some of their torches and saws and things like that. And they're giving these crosses to people. So somebody reached out to Dan and gave him the negative to the cross. So with the cross cut out, and they said, hey, can you do something with this? And Dan said, well, yeah. And they wanted a knife. And Dan's like, well, you know, this, it's not hardenable steel. But I can put some in the tang and we can do that. And so, you know, Dan, I was at a military base. My ex-wife was in the Air Force. My ex-wife is currently in the Air Force. I was in for 11 years, but, he's right outside of Barksdale Air Force Base. And so my wife was stationed there at the time, and, Dan loved that I was ex-military. So he gave me a couple of pieces of the steel. And so anytime I've got a post 9/11 vet, or somebody significant that means something to, I forge weld a small piece of it into a tang. I don't tell them about it. It's not something that I like advertise. I tell them once I give them the knife, but you know, it's just something that I do that, you know, it's kind of special. And as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't really belong to me, you know? Right. So I try to use it, you know, with good intentions.
Yeah.
So that's where I got the 9/11 steel. Paxton from 5050 Forge, super, super good guy. we made the Damascus together, but I digress. So the week before Blade Show, Bob Rankin calls me. It's a Saturday morning, and he is just in tears, and he's having a rough time. And he told me, you know, the night before his son killed himself, and he's like, Chad, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, well, take care of your family. I was like, we'll figure everything else out. So I sent Alicia from Blade Show a text message, and I was like, listen, we want to try to, you know, here's what's going on with Bob's son. Well, I had her call me, but I was like, here's what's going on with Bob's son. He's not gonna be able to make it. I was like, but a bunch of us are gonna cover a stable for him. So like, can I get some passes? Can we? And she's, yeah, absolutely. She was, you know, she jumped to help, jumped to the rescue, and they were awesome. And so myself, Rocco, Nico, and Eric, we all helped cover the table. I think Lucas helped as well. We all helped cover his table, and you know, there was a Rocco brought a book, and you know, you write a nice note to Bob, and And so in the meantime, while we're kind of getting ready for this and everybody's got their Blade Show prep, I was like, you know, it'd be really cool. Since I'm going to Blade Show, I can talk to a lot of people. But I called Dennis. I was like, hey, so here's what happened to Bob. Bob's son was an 8.5 year Navy vet. Do you want to make a knife for him? I've got some 9/11 steel. And Dennis just so happened to have his son was sending him some an arrestor cable from USS Eisenhower. That's where his son's stationed. His son's in the Navy, and so he sent him that to kind of. He's like, dude, I've got the perfect piece of material for it, and so you know, kind of snowballed from there. I called Jeff Fader and told Fader what we're doing and asked him to, you know, to give us a plug on their podcast and. And Bob's actually recording on Full Blast next Monday, I think, the 31st.
Oh, nice.
And so, you know, it's cool that when something like this happens to somebody so significant in the maker community, how kind of everybody swoops in and comes together and really tries to, you know, pitch in. And yeah, exactly, pitch in and do their best. And,
yeah, and I'll say like. Just my own experience with the maker community, knife makers and makers. You mentioned like someone who's so significant, everyone swoops in, but like really, you know, I will say not insignificant, but small guys, you know, when things happen to people and like when we can, I've had different people reach out to me to help contribute different things. Like the community's here. And that's the one thing that's, you know, like something that is a real, like pure pleasure and joy from social media is that we have this community that we can really all like we've, you know, I met everyone, you know, I met you and Dennis and so many people just through like social media community and the knife making community. It's such an open and welcome place compared to, in my mind, some other communities that are much more like, you know, more secluded, I guess, you know, where it's a very it's a small community, the knife making community, but it's definitely very open and welcome, and everyone's like willing to give information and help each other out. It's really nice.
I completely agree. It's, you know, what's weird about the knife making community is even adjacent communities aren't the same. So like woodworkers, or not woodworkers, but like Hano material guys, people who like, that's like, they're not, they don't have the same kind of community that knife makers have, which is kind of wild. Right. They all,
even the, you know, blacksmithing community, I think, is not
their customers.
Same.
Yeah. Right. No, I agree. Yeah. I mean, there's, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure what it is exactly, but maybe it's because we all like, I don't know, spend so much time alone in our shops or something. I mean, you would think that's exclusive, not like exclusive to knife making, but I don't know.
Say,
yeah,
people just really want to show off their knives, and they got to get around a few other people. Like, check this out, man. Sure. Well, how many people can I get around to show this off? This is sweet.
Yeah,
it's funny because I don't know about you guys, but I know for me personally, probably 90% of my followers on Instagram are all knife makers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're not customers. Like, so when you post something on Instagram, I'm like, hey, I'm just showing off to my friends. Like, it's not.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. And that's what we all want. That's why we all go to Blade Show, because we just want to see cool knives.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Hang listen,
I go, yeah, I go hang out with my friends and I buy materials. Like, if I sell a knife, that's great, but like, that's not what I'm here for.
Cool. All right. So you have the steel from the 9/11 towers. So can you talk about like making the Damascus for the blade?
Sure. So Paxton and I were kind of putting our heads together about what kind of Damascus we wanted to make. And, we were going back, we kind of wanted to do something a little bit fancy. So we were talking about doing some mosaics. We were talking about doing, because Paxton and I, every time Paxton and I get in the shop together, it's like, how far can we push this theory? You know what I mean? Cool. And like we push it to where we're almost breaking it, and then we never do. And it's fine, but like, you know, we didn't know if that was like the right thing to do here.
Right.
So keeping in theme with Project 22, we took a piece of and Paxton actually prepped a lot of this. So he made a bar of 22 layers. And so we took that bar of 22 layers, and then we sandwiched it into 11 pieces, and then we did 11 layers of 1084. So it's alternating. So it's 22, 1, 22, 1. And so technically it's, you know, it's a lot of layers, but
right, but it's 22 layers, including like the mono steel and then the layers of 22.
Right, exactly. That's cool. Yeah, and so and so we forged it out long ways instead of on its side. And by doing that, a lot of people call this bacon Damascus. But it's not we just did it a little bit different. Like, I've never seen anybody do it quite like this. And so what's cool about it is it looks like a freaking flag. And because other than God himself, Nick Rossi, nobody's a perfect forger, right? And so you can't get there's like little waves in it, and it looks like, you know, ripples of the flag or ripples on the water, or it's and there's so much symbology there. It turned out really cool. And so we get this this thing stacked out, and it was just a massive, massive bar of Damascus. And so I think it was like 22 inches long or something like that, and 2.5 inches tall, and like a quarter inch thick. And I sent it to Dennis, and he's like, "Like, I think I'm going to make two knives."
Yeah, it turned into a set.
Or a sword. Yeah. Yeah. So when I'm trying to think of like, so I'm looking at the knife, and they have, like you said, the bar has lines going from the tip to the bolster, like through the handle. That's the lines are going that way. When you forged that out, so you had, like, I kind of saw on Instagram there was the big block with all the layers, so the the 22s with the 1084 in between. And then I saw you forge it sideways, right? Instead of forging the tack to stack tall like a big sandwich,
right?
I saw it go sideways. Now I'm assuming you kind of did both, but like, I was in the moment, I was like, wow, that's not the way you normally see people forge that down. I guess because you wanted those layers to stand out and be thick.
Exactly. Yeah. And what's if anybody's ever worked with Paxton or worked with really people that make Damascus on like a larger scale, they use kiss blocks. And Paxton is anal about them, and it's made me a better forger for it.
Right.
Because when I first started making Damascus with Dan, and I probably made, probably 30 or 40 billets of Damascus before I ever started to make my first Damascus knife. Cause Dan put me to work. I was cheap and free labor. So, and not very smart labor either. So, when I forged with Dan, he used some kiss block, but it was more like, this looks about how thick I want it. It wasn't, you know, and Paxton's, he's very meticulous. So he's got his 2-inch kiss blocks. Then he's got, he calls it 2 and a fatty. So he'll put like, it's, like a 32nd almost on top of his 2-inch to get his 2 inches, and then when he turns it to the side to kiss it, to knock it down to a true 2 inches, he gets that big pop where all the foreskin pops off, and he gets it all in one grate. And if you ever do go watch his TikToks. His TikToks are awesome. But if you watch his TikToks when he's squeezing that down, he has the best pop in the game. It's awesome.
You lose that. That's the fatty that comes off.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he's got his two and a fatty. But yeah, no. And Paxton's, I can't say enough good things about him. And I met him through tragedy too. He lost his finger in a coal iron forge press.
What?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Yeah, they were talking about a knife talk, and this is an inappropriate story, so it's probably perfect. I reached out to Paxton to just kind of see how he was doing. And I think I bought Damascus from him before, but I didn't really know him very well. Mm. And so I reached out to Paxton. I was like, "Hey, man, how are you doing?" And he's like, "You know, I think I'm fine." Like, they hadn't taken the finger off yet. They weren't sure like how much of his hand he was going to be able to use. Like there's a lot of unknown, you know, and everybody's reaching out to Paxton. Hey, are you going to be able to work again? Are you going to be able to forge Damascus? Like, and he doesn't have these answers, you know? Right. And I remember the second that Paxton and I became friends, because I told him, I was like, "Hey man, just look on the bright side. At least it's going to feel a lot bigger in your hand." And dude, he called me. He's like, "Dude, you have no idea how bad I need to hear that." Like, I needed some levity. And like, everybody's asking all the time, like, "How are you doing? You know, what's going on?"
Yeah,
and it's especially when you don't have the answers. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Really.
So that's kind of how Paxton and I met. But Paxton's, dude, he's just one of those guys. He's salt of the earth. And he only lives like an hour and a half from me, so I go.
Nice. Yeah, my only experience with him is just like his, you know, I follow him on Instagram, so it's just the like that view, the first person view of like pulling the steel out of the kerosene or something, and then walking over it into the forge. That's like his like signature video shot. You know, like I know that one like the back of my hand. I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's him."
Yeah, and I've seen other people do it too, and you're like, "Yeah, it's just not the same."
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, no. So that's kind of how that started. But yeah, but you're right. So we forged it long ways, which is not the typical, but we wanted the bold, really bold pattern. And we were going back and forth whether or not we wanted to make the alternating layers 1084 if we want to do 1520. So having that like silver. So we weren't real sure. Paxton's like, "Dude, I think we need to do the dark. I think it'll look better." And dude, it came out so freaking good.
So the what's the 22 layer? Is that 1084 and 1520?
It's 1084 and 1520, and then the alternating layers
in between.
Yeah, it's 1084 as well. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Sweet. Which is interesting to me, because I quit making my Damascus out of 1084. I do all Crew Forge V or ADC RV2.
Oh, right on. Why'd you switch?
I like the vanadium. And I hate myself, and hand sanding is gonna be the that's the real answer, is because I hate myself, and hand sanding is gonna take forever. But I'm out of after my temper, I'm at like 62, sometimes 63 Rockwell.
Nice.
On Damascus, and typically my Damascus is going to be 59 after temper.
Right.
So, which I think, Dennis, that's right. That's what this came out at.
59 and a half. Yep.
Yeah. 59. Yeah. And a half, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. I do predominantly 1084 with, mono steel knives. I really like 1084. I like working with it. I like the way it holds an edge, and it, and I do not like, again, I'm just a hobby knife maker. So I don't have a kiln. I just heat treat out of the forge, and it's always worked really well for me. I've had a little trouble with some other steels, and although I've done, I've done 1084 and ADC RV2 also works really well. So, I haven't ever had any problem with that. So that's usually my go-to.
I like 1084 is great out of a kiln. it's one of the, anytime I tell people to, you know, to start with a beginner steel, it's 1084 or 1080 is what I always suggest. They're both great kind of, not saying that you're a beginner because you're not, but I'm saying like when I'm recommending steels, I always keep people away from 1075 or 1095, because it just requires the soak time. And
right, yeah, and it just takes much more like focus and time and effort into it. If you're doing something that you're not going to have a perfect temperature like a kiln, then you want to have something that you have some variance, you have some, you know, some flexibility there.
Yeah. That's sure. Also, vapor jackets. I mean, vapor jackets are a thing, mm-hmm. and you'll get auto hormones and stuff like that, and yeah. And sometimes they can look cool. But I had a buddy of mine in Canada. He was making Suspender Brothers, if you know who they are. He was making this killer feather. I mean, it was really, really killer. But when he sticks his Damascus into the quench, he doesn't agitate it. And there was a vapor jacket. And so he's got this big auto hormone in the middle of his feather. And he's like, what the hell just happened? I'm like, that sucks, man.
How do you, like, I don't know. I feel like that seems like, even when I was first starting knife making, I feel like everything I saw, you know, even like very basic, just watching random YouTube videos and stuff, or like even before YouTube videos, like, you know, people were always agitating it. So I just assume, you know, like when you do it, that's kind of what you think. And, you know, you hear about the reasons why, you learn the reasons why later because of the vapor jacket, you know, but like, I don't know. It seems like, if you get to that point where you're making Damascus, I don't know. It's hard for me to think of how someone could have made it that far and not thought about that as like a very like important thing. But what
do you get? And this guy, the kind of Damascus this guy's making is like he follows like Mareko and a lot of those guys, and like that's the caliber of Damascus this guy's getting into. And and then you see him do something just really dumb. And listen, I mean, we all do dumb shit,
right? Yeah, exactly.
You know, do you guys know who Ed Jitz is? Edward Raduin. Ed's awesome. But I don't know how many times he sent me a video. He's like, dude, look how thin I got this knife. I was like, oh wow, that's awesome. He's like, yeah, guess what? It's not hardened yet.
Oh jeez!
And I'm like, you learn, man. Yeah, he's like, oh man, that sucks. Jeez.
So, all right. So,
So we get the Damascus made. We get the Damascus made. We send it over to Dennis, and then I'll let Dennis take over and shut up for a little bit.
Sure. Hopefully, my audio is okay. So I'll keep going. You guys tell me if it's not.
You sound good.
Good. So yeah, I got the Damascus. It is way bigger than I thought it was going to be, which is cool. So as soon as I saw it, I was contemplating, do I make this massive chopper or whatever? And I wanted to go kitchen knife to make it more appealing to a larger audience, so more tickets would be sold. Yeah. So I ended up doing a two knife set. So there's like a K-tip Gyoto, and then I figured I would keep with the kind of a Japanese with a Western handle theme, and went with a Santoku beside it. Nice. So yeah, definitely lots of steel to do that.
Yeah, I was looking at when in your video you have it, and you were like, hey, here's the piece, and I'd seen obviously the thumbnail, and I knew you had done two knives out. I was like, you know, it was a long piece, but I was in my mind, I'm like, how do you get two knives out of that? That's like two, and like I'd seen your knives, but then obviously it was like, One was up, right side up, and the other one was upside down. Right?
Yeah, you got a 69 them.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's exactly what they did. Yeah. Yeah, and as Chad said, my son's military. He's Navy. He's on the USS Eisenhower aircraft carrier, and he and I were already talking because I wanted a piece of arrestor cable, which is, for those that don't know, that's the cable that stops the planes when they land on the deck. And they just throw that cable overboard when they replace it, literally. Yeah. So I asked him, and then he said, well, let me go ask the bosses, whatever. And he came back and said, how much do you want? And I was like, let's see, how much can you ship to me?
I was going to say, how much did you get?
It was about 20 inches. But the cable is about 2.5 inches across. It's a big cable.
How much can I carry in two hands?
Yeah. Right. And he also gave me some smaller cable that was related. It's not, I don't know where that cable was from, but he gave me some smaller pieces of cable as well.
Yeah, that's wild. I was surprised at how thick that was. Like, it makes sense because you, like, it makes sense when you think, okay, yeah, it's got to be that big. And you see the jets landing and you can see the cable, right? So it's got to be a big cable. But then just seeing how thick that was on your table, I was like, man, that is crazy. You know, how, like, rigid something that thick has got to be. Like,
yeah, but I've seen videos of the planes landing and it looks like the cable is, like, an inch thick, not two and a half inches thick, because it really moves when the planes land.
I know, it's like a rubber band.
Right.
And you see, like, oh, wait, this is a twisted braided cable. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's wild about those hooks. So I used to work on F-15s, and it's a super cool aircraft, but a buddy of mine, he worked on the 117s. And when you meet him, we called him Chocolate Chip Face. He looked like Morgan Freeman. And I didn't realize, I thought I was just making fun of him because of a deformity in his, but I wasn't. So we have to do these tests on the aircraft where you take, there are these air cartridges that we put in the aircraft. It's basically a shotgun shell without any propellant, right? Without any projectile. So it's just propellant, it shoots gas, and then this gas unlocks various hooks on the aircraft. So if you have to jettison, like a pod, or if a missile store, or for the F-117, the arrestor hook as well. But the difference in the F-117 is it's painted. So it's got this radar reflective paint on it. And that's what makes the F-117 an interesting aircraft, because it's technically it's a bomber because it only holds two bombs, but it's like a hyperspeed bomb. Anyway, so it's this whole it's a pretty cool thing. Well, part of our job as the crew chief when we're doing that is to make sure that we hold on one second. I've got to turn that off somehow. Did you guys hear that beep? No, just me. Anyway, no. So perfect. Then I'm not going to turn it off. We have to pull all these cartridges out before we do a test, and we're doing a jettison test, and you have to turn the aircraft on and you hit the jettison button, but it's really important that you take all these carts out. Well, somebody in his crew didn't, and they left the one in by the arrestor hook. And so the hook blew, it comes down, knocks him out, almost kills him. But all this paint goes flying into his body. And so all these little black chips that he's got in his body, I thought I was making fun of him for, like, having moles or something. It wasn't. It was because he literally has paint embedded into his skin. It'll never come out.
Holy cow. That's crazy.
But he doesn't show up on radar.
He's still stealth. That's right.
Only half of him, Michelle. He's like he's like a net. Like, something's there.
Oh, so yeah, it was pretty coincidental that my son Cameron was sending me this cable, so I figured I wanted to use it in some respect. Obviously, the Damascus was already done, so I figured I would make the pin material, and which was very interesting. Forge welding Damascus cable down to like a cigar shape, and then turning it on the lathe down to 3/16, which I've never turned anything that small, but it worked. And made the pin material out of that.
How much of the cable did you use to do that?
Not very much. I mean, I took a couple of strands. I didn't use the whole 2.5-inch thing. So gotcha. It was a couple of strands together.
Yeah. Cause I saw you, like, you twisted it first to kind of solidify it.
Right.
And, so when you twisted it, that was only a couple strands that you were twisting together.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. I think there's six strands. In fact, the center of that cable is a rope that you have to remove. Cause they soak that rope in oil, and that's what keeps the cable from, that's what lubricates the cable.
Oh, right.
So you have to unthread it just to get the rope out.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, that was the pin material. And then, of course, like the construction of the blades was mostly just stock removal.
Right.
Then we get into the handle material. So Lucas O'Hara approached me at once he heard about the project and stuff. approached me at Blade Show and said, would you like to use this wood? It's white oak from the last tree that George Washington himself planted on his Mount Vernon plantation.
That's wild.
So the tree fell in November of 2019, and they started harvesting it in 2020. And the guys at Black Horse Forge in Virginia helped cut it up. And that's where Lucas got it for another project. But he had some left over and offered it to this project. So we we got wood that's almost as old as the United States.
Oh, man. That's so cool. That's like, it's whenever, you know, like when I'm using wood, you know, especially when like a, something comes down or you chop it up, you start to like process it. You know, I think about like the age already, you know, like using something like I picked up a piece, you know, I got a piece of bog oak, but that, you know, bog oak was like from 3500 BC or something. But even, you know, oak and, you know, and any wood that you get, even from a store, everything has got, it's like 100 years old, 200 years old, 300 years old, you know, like this stuff is already that old, even though like you're using it fresh, it already has like such a history to it. So that's like such a cool one that they can like actually, you know, trace that back to George Washington planting it on Monticello. Is super cool.
And there's Washington Post articles on this tree, and there was a couple of Civil War soldiers that had carved something into the tree, and there's actually provenance of like the tree with the markings were still on the tree, so they definitely traced it back. This is not a random but
anyway, someone's like, yeah, this is a piece of oak from Washington's yeah.
But the weird thing is, and I don't know if it was just because I know it's George Washington, but while I'm sanding this wood, it has the most amazing smell to it. And I don't know if it's just the history because I know it, but probably the best smelling wood I've ever had in the shop.
Oh, man, that's wild. That's cool. Yeah, is it like psychosomatic?
Right.
Is that just like, yeah, it's like, does it, if a tree falls in the woods, does it make any noise?
Is margarita that's better awesome. On the beach, or is it just that
you're yes.
on the beach? Yes. Yeah. Yes. The answer is yes.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Unrelated, you know how we all find ways to get wood? Like everybody has like a stash, right? Have you guys ever walked across the street, Blade Show, and there's that, there's like that daycare? There's a massive burl on the side of that tree.
Yeah, we saw it too.
I every year I threaten to bring a pickup truck and like a ladder and just pull up next to it. You can throw some eye bolts in there with some rope and you could do a pulley system, cut that burl off in no time and drop through the back of a truck.
Yeah, paint it up real quick. Boom, gone. Yeah,
good to go. Like freaking Ocean's 13.
Just wear those orange vests. No one would even question you.
Absolutely not. No, dude. Yeah. Put an orange vest on. I already have a lanyard for Blade Show. throw a couple of radios on your hip. You're fine.
And everyone at Blade would be like, "Oh, someone finally did it."
I don't even know what kind of wood the tree is, but it does have a big burl on it.
It's. I want to say it's a oh gosh, what grows acorns? Oak, right?
It is an oak tree. Yeah. It is an oak. Yeah. It's not that interesting, but
right. Still, well, burl's always going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
I had Ben Snurl called me one day. He goes, "Hey man, can you be at my house in the next couple of days?" I was like, "Why?" He said, "I've got about 5,000 pounds of mesquite burl that I'm going to burn if you don't want it." And I'm like, I was like, "I can't be there. I'm sorry, man." He's like, "All right, you're lost. I'm burning it."
You're like, "Can you cut a piece off and send it to me?" Right. man,
Dennis. So you did those for the scales, and in the video, you're like, "It's not. I mean, for the side of
the wood did not look that interesting. So you put the really nice blue scales on. I mean, the other part of the handle. But the top of the scales came out really nice. It's got some type of like darker and lighter pattern.
Like, yeah, so
almost like a speckled look. What is that?
So for everyone else, the you know, it's the George Washington wood is great, but it's white oak, not very interesting. So we ended up using that as liner material, but pretty thick. I left it about a 16th, and then I used blue, like dyed blue, tiger maple. Nice. And I think that the dye wasn't perfect, which actually turned out kind of cool because there's some almost like these wispy areas that have almost like the white maple color.
The maple, nice.
So that kind of blends in. It actually ended up being really cool because it blended in with the liners really well. Nice. And I wanted the blue. I picked that material specifically for the blue waves to represent, you know, the blue waves of the ocean, because Bobby was Navy. Yeah. So I thought that went really well.
Nice. Yeah, it looks so nice. And you know, like when you mentioned it, like before you mentioned it, I'd seen the pictures, like that was my mindset, was like the, you know, the ocean waves are like the lines on the steel and the blue. So yeah, it definitely came across really well. Mm-hmm. Turned out so nice. One thing I want to go back to, you in the video, you talked about tapering the tang of the handles, and you did that on your, you have a flattening
surface grinder,
jig, right? Or the surface grinder. Yeah. What did you do? So I was like, you said you did shims to bring up the wood. What did you do? Because like you explained it really quickly and I didn't really get it in the video. Cause I was thinking like, okay, in that situation, like if you just clamp everything together and then you shim up just one side, so that way the steel is, you know, or parallel with the surface grinder. Is that kind of what you did?
Or? That's kind of what you have to do, but you have to do the scales one at a time. Because if you just stack two scales and you drill through, when you put them on the knife, they won't line, like because of the angle of the taper, those holes won't line up. So you have to put the knife, scale, and shim it half the width of the difference between the front and the back. I have a whole video on how to do this.
All right.
Just so your pins go through, because if you try to do it the other way, you know, your pins won't go through.
Right. Yeah. And I guess in my mind, I was like, cause I have not done a taper tang, but I was about to at one point, like years ago, I had a blade that I was going to do taper tang on. And I guess like my idea to do it would have been just to like, clamp the scale. Well, yeah, maybe not. No, cause I was thinking, I guess in my mind, I'm thinking like clamp the scales on either side of the handle or either side of the blade and then just drill straight through.
But then how do you locate your hole?
But then how do you locate your holes? That's what I just thought. I was like, wait, no, you can't do that. Yeah.
You spit on it, throw some flour.
In the other video, when I show this, I actually accentuated a lot. And then you see it. And once you accentuate it a lot, then it makes sense. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's why you have to do this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because I understood the whole thing, right? It's like, of course, you can't clamp them together because then they're going to be like not straight across. They're going to be at an angle to each other once that's splayed out. But yeah.
Cool. And I love the look of the taper tang. It looks so
good.
Yeah.
I'm warming up to it a lot. I'm going to do a lot of those on chef knives, especially. So
yeah.
I remember the first time I saw one, Matt Gaskill. Who actually, you know, you look a lot alike.
He's good looking too. Gaskill.
He's good looking too. it's definitely not a bad thing. Matt's a good dude, but Matt makes some incredible knives. But he does these taper tangs that are, I mean, just really sharp looking. He actually put a like a calculator on his website, so you can go and calculate how much you need to shim each side to taper your tang.
That's cool. crazy.
Measure the front, measure the back, subtract them, divide by two.
Yeah, there you go.
That's all you do.
some calipers and you're good.
Dennis also knows how.
Dennis is the calculator. It's like this is the number to call when you need to figure out your proportions.
I'm a math major, remember?
That's right. And a Canadian, so your school systems are better too.
So they tell me, but I don't know.
Yeah, I've seen a bunch of, like, I don't know if I've ever seen a taper tang on a culinary knife, but I've seen them on a lot of bushcraft knives because, you know, that's your start. Like the stock is usually thicker to be like a stronger knife. And I've seen a lot of people doing that. And that you can really see it because it's quite accentuated. But yeah, it's cool.
I like it because I don't have to drill holes in the tang.
Dennis, were you all like, I guess Chad too, were you guys more careful with the process of making not only Damascus but doing the knife? Did it slow you down knowing that there's some importance to it and there's some, like, I really want to get this right? Did you, like, was there any, not that you take lesser steps, but were there things you didn't risk?
Yeah, like I did all the grinding post heat treat on this knife, which I don't normally do.
My man.
In fact, when I heat treated it at full width, full thickness, I still had a slight warp that I had to fix and temper.
Yeah.
Which I think I tempered that thing like 6 times to get that warp out. Because I wanted it perfect. So
That makes sense. I can imagine the pressure and you're like, I'll just take my time on every little step. But you're also in a bit of a rush to get it done. So it's really great you guys came up with such a beautiful set of knives.
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine like the, you know, I mean, each of those things, but especially like the wood, you know, being like the George Washington wood and like, I don't know, you know, I don't know how much extra you had, but yeah, if you like
zero,
not enough. not enough.
If I screwed that up, it was done. Like, I didn't know what I was going to do.
You're like, I'm going to edit that out of the video.
Well, like misdrilling a hole or something like that would have been catastrophic.
Yeah, that's tough. Yeah, there's no like, let me just try to bend this back into place like I did with my knife, you know, like, let's see what it does. Bing!
Like, oh, this wood touched George Washington wood at one point.
I
rubbed it on the pieces.
Oh yeah, you know.
it has George Washington wood sawdust in it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, mixed in with the epoxy.
I always heat treat my chef knives relatively thin, but I don't. I always grind post heat treat because I'm going so like I'm doing 3/32nds typically, like my spine, and so I typically do all of my grinding post heat treat because I just don't want to. Especially when it's Damascus.
Right. Yeah. But so I guess the only thing I think about that is that you won't really know. Well, I guess you kind of understand the pattern. When you understand Damascus, you understand what the pattern should look like at the end. But, you know, I guess everything grinding. You know,
yeah. I mean, you
I
can.
Guess it's not going to. You're either going to get it or you're not. And so whether you grind it before heat treat or not, it's still going to be the same pattern, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, I clean the steel. There's not like forge weld or anything like that on there, or or scale or anything. Like, I clean the steel, but yeah. And so, in fact, that's how I get it so thin, is because I'm usually using a surface grinder. But but yeah, and you can etch, you know, non-hardened steel and still see a pattern. It's not you know, and in fact, the colors are reversed. I don't know if you know that or not.
No, I didn't. That's wild. Yeah. Huh. That's crazy. That's crazy. That's new to me.
Dennis, watching your video, there's one. What? There was a really odd thing. It was when you went to, I forget what point it was. You were grinding, and there's like a 3-second, really slowed down shot of grinding. What was that?
Oh, that was probably on the big surface grinder.
Yeah, but why like 3 seconds and why super slow?
I don't know, because I thought it looked cool.
Because it looks awesome. Yeah.
I like the sparks. So.
But it was like so quick. I was like, oh, that's, and it's done. And you like moved on to the next thing. I was like, all right.
I figured people were bored of watching a surface grinder go back and forth.
I'm never bored.
One last beauty shot and then move on.
Right. Well, what you don't see is because these guys sent me quarter inch stock, I was on that surface grinder for probably over an hour.
You know that's what you asked for, right?
No, I didn't. I said I wanted 2 inches thick. 2 inches wide, not...
No, that's not what you... Hold on. We're checking. We're going back. We're checking.
They're like, he wants quarter.
I might have said quarter, shop. But I don't remember.
2 feet by 2 inches? All right.
I probably didn't know what I was making back then, so maybe I did say a quarter inch.
Just give me the best you can get, the thickest you can get. I want it all.
Also, in the photos on Instagram, there's like a red hue on the blade. Is that just the lighting, or is
that's just lighting? Yeah, it was one of the photos. I'm no photo editing expert. I couldn't get that red tinge out of it.
Okay, I mean it looks fine. I was just wondering what it was.
Yeah.
Well, no, it brings up a good point, because I want to talk about Jocelyn Fraser for a second. So she donated some Photoshop photos for us. Some Blade magazine quality photos that she does just so well. And if anybody ever needs like that service, she does a really cool thing where she'll take it from your iPhone pictures. So you can take a couple of pictures of your iPhone, send it to her digitally, and then she'll give you you know, these Blade quality photos. And she does an incredible job, but she donated her time doing that, and then she's posting about it too, and she bought some, you know, she bought a ticket, and she's she's been really supportive.
That's cool. Yeah, I saw a couple people post pictures from her of their blades.
Yeah.
And I'd seen her before, but not that often. But you know, that's really beautiful work.
Yeah, so her dad's a knife maker. And she's a kid. Oh, cool. Like, people don't realize, I say a kid, she's 22, I think. And so her dad's a knife maker. He's a pretty talented guy, but super introvert. So like, he doesn't go to any of the shows or anything like that. Right. So like, it's funny, because she knows more knife makers now than he does. And he's been doing it for 20 years, you know. But you know, when we were in Blade, I kind of tried to get them involved and introduce them to people, because she was the official photographer for Blade this year. So, which is super cool, because they fly her out, they put her up, and then she gets to do all the winter photos for the the knives that are submitted. And so that's just a big honor. But so she's pumped that happened. And but her mom, they go, you know where we really want to go to eat? And I was like, where? They said Waffle House. Because they don't have one in Montana.
You're like,
really? And I was like, okay, yeah, there's one across the street. I screwed up and told them that I'd take them there Sunday morning at 7 a.m., knowing damn well I was going to be up till 4 o'clock in the morning Saturday night. Yeah. Drive back Sunday. Yeah,
that's what Waffle House is for.
For sure.
Exactly. We'll cover a little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sop it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. No, but the photos, who took these photos for the knife? They're really nice.
So Dennis...
Go ahead. I took the photos, and then she took one of those photos and touched it up and made them look way better.
They're really nice.
Yeah, I'll send it to you in a DM, or I still need to post about it. I'm trying not to. I need to post about it this weekend, so I'm trying to hold off on posting, because everybody's posting. We've got almost 45 days to like keep this momentum going, and so I don't want to make too many posts about it. So I'm going to make a big post about it this weekend, and then Bob's got he's got a GoFundMe as well. Going so he's got the knife raffle, which is great. He also has a GoFundMe, so if that's something you guys want to support, you can go to Bob Rankin's Instagram page, and he'll have links to the GoFundMe. I'm going to make do like a Facebook post about it as well. So so they've gained a bunch of money, and you know what's really cool is and if you want to, you can reach out to Bob, and I'm sure Bob would be more than willing to share. He put together this PDF document, a bunch of Robert. So his son's name's Robert. Some called him Bobby, but a bunch of Bobby's friends put together some emails and sent Bob Rankin stories and emails about Bobby, and just kind of an outreach of like how much they love him and what kind of person he is. And so if you want to reach out to Bob and ask for a copy of that, Bob wants people to know, you know, how good of a man Bobby was. And, and you know, Bob said it on the Work For It podcast. And it's something that really kind of, you know, hit me as a father. He's like, you know, everybody's going to love their kid. He's like, but my goal as a father is to be able to like my kid too. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I really liked who he was as a man, who he was as a person. And that was, you know, that's something that really hit hard because listen, kids are assholes, right? We don't always like them.
Yeah.
We always love them. We're always going to love them, but sometimes
we don't always
like them. I mean, that's for everybody, but like, you know, but you always feel guilty about like, man, my kid's a dick today.
right. Yeah, exactly. What did I do wrong?
Right. Exactly. What did I do to deserve this? So, I don't know. Mine's eight. And so you catch yourself having to say just ridiculous things, that you never think you'd have to say, like, hey, why are we playing in the toilet? She's like, I don't know. And I'm like, yeah, me neither. I'm like, you know, that's where dad, well, you know, that's where dad poops, right? She's like, what? I'm like, you do too. And she's like, oh yeah, maybe I shouldn't play in here. I'm like, you're eight. You're not three. Like, come on.
Yeah, come on.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Conversation I didn't think I had to have anymore.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, let's, so I think that was a good like transition into the recommendations. Now, typically we do a bunch of, you know, we'll all do recommendations, but we want to kind of re-recommend where people can, to go and support the build and support Bob Rankin. So you already said he's got a GoFundMe through his Instagram, but where can people go again to get the stickers and stuff?
www.bobrankincustomknives.com. Go to his shop, check out the stickers in the shop. You can also watch Dennis's YouTube channel at Tyrell Knifeworks on YouTube. The guy does a fantastic job. Go check out some of his other stuff. I'm actually on one of his Triple T Tool Tuesdays early on.
Oh, that's way back.
Oh yeah,
I saw that today because I was looking to see, because like on your Instagram post, Chad, you had said like check out the YouTube video. So then I went to see if you had a YouTube channel as well, and it was like you have a YouTube and it's like a short or something. And then I was like looking, and then I in the search came up with like you and Dennis. I was like, oh, that's got to be it. That's got to be recent. And I was like, wait, that's from 3 years ago or something like that. Yeah. I was like, oh man.
Yeah, that's when Dennis and I first started hanging out. But yeah, so that's where you go buy the stickers and check out Dennis's channel. It's awesome, man. I'm so proud of like what all Dennis has done. It's cool to be able to call him a friend and to watch him kind of grow all of this, and it's a really special thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things that like I've as well, like, you know, Dennis, we've also been friends for a while as well, and just like seeing how inspired you are with what you're doing, and how I could tell I don't know. It seems like you're just like really motivated to push yourself further and further and further. And maybe it's like, because it feels like to me, it comes fairly natural to you. And because of that, it's like, it's exciting. You keep pushing yourself and doing really cool, like really cool things. So it's just fun to watch.
Well, it's super fun and I'm having fun with it. When it stops being fun, then, you know, things might be different.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's funny in the, we did a short Blade show video, just put it out last week, and we got like a section with a bunch of people we like talk and meet too, and like, and then Dennis, I think there's two of your knives or maybe three of them in the video, but you're not there because when we came around to shoot it, you were away and not near your booth. So it's, your knives got in there.
As long as the knives made it, that's
the
fine.
Knives made it. At least two of the knives in separate cases.
Yeah, we're just there talking to Jared and Brian Cohn and stuff. We're just looking at the knives, and I'm like, don't worry, I can pick these up. I know who made them. It's all right.
Well, you guys will have to stay tuned to see what I do with the rest of the cable from the Eisenhower.
Ooh. Nice, right. Are you going to build a new cable?
Yeah, right.
I just sit down and made a new one.
I'm going to build an F-16. And then
so I know how to maintain the armament systems. No big deal.
It'll be a sword for which my new oven coming next week will be used.
Oh, okay, all right, nice.
I speaking of F-16s, I may or may not, I can't wait till he hears this, I may or may not have talked Brian House's kid out of joining the Army.
Oh no.
What, you told him to join the Air Force?
Yeah, hell yeah.
I was going to tell him to join the Navy.
Well, you know, it, honestly, that was kind of the direction that I put him. I was like, if you don't, I get it, you don't want to join the Navy. I get it. Ships aren't for everybody. I understand. I was like, but if you're going to join the armed forces, the Air Force is, in my opinion, the way to go. It's just the quality of life's better. Listen, my ex-wife almost got stationed at Fort Carson, right? So she's Air Force, but that's an Army base. It's in Colorado. This is not a joke. They pay the Air Force an extra $300 a month to have to be stationed there because of unsatisfactory living conditions. That's not even where they're living. They give them an extra, but it's okay for the Army. The Army doesn't get anything for living there.
My stepson's ex-Army, and he just left Carson.
Yeah.
They still live there.
Yeah, no, it's a really, I don't know, the Air Force, I got quote unquote, I got deployed to UAE, and we were in downtown, but we stayed in a really nice hotel. Like, that was for 45 days. And like, that's just the quality of life's better, you know? And so,
yeah. Well, I'm not sure what he ended up doing, but Brian did put one of his posts up. He said he was just, they're on vacation, but he said he had just, you know, sending Dexter back home on his own on a plane, and he had just gone to the recruiters with him. So he didn't say exactly which recruiter. He just said they had gone to the recruiter.
In the comments he said Army, and then and so I sent Dexter. So this happened literally just before this podcast. Sent Dexter a message. I said, "Call me. Here's my number." I'm like, "Dude, you can join. I'm not talking to you about joining the Army, but let me tell you about the Army people that I've been deployed with."
And he was like, "Make sure you mention my name for the bonus." No, just kidding.
Right. Well, no, I don't. I'm not in anymore. I was like, but you know, I was like, listen, they're going to throw a lot of jargon at you. They're going to try and get you to sign contracts that you're not sure what to do. Like, call me while you're there. Yeah, that's everybody. I was like, call me while you're there. I'll talk to the recruiter for you. I was like, if I don't know exactly what the job is that they're asking you to do, I know somebody who does that job. I was like, and I'll put you in contact with somebody who's doing it today, and they'll walk you through like your day to day. And like, you know, recruiters are famous for this. They'll tell you, you know, one thing, like aircraft armament systems. Man, that sounds sweet. Oh, you're doing all this technical stuff. No, I'm putting big bombs on little planes. And like, that's and it's fine, but like, that's not what the description sounds like. You know what I mean? And so, so they try to trick you with this jargon, and you know what I mean, you don't know any better, and that's okay because you're not supposed to. But and the recruiters, the thing is, the recruiters don't know either.
Right.
They think they know, but you know, anyway. So
I was like, they're just guys with jobs, you know. Right, like, exactly. My brother-in-law is just, he's Navy, he's a mechanic, and he's just transitioned over to being a recruiter, and he moved him back to like his hometown where he got recruited from. But you know, he's a Navy mechanic, like, and now he's just going to be recruiting for the Navy. So his job, he knew his job, you know, and he knew what he did. He knows like kind of the peripheral jobs around him, but he doesn't know everything behind everything else that he's telling people to get into. So
exactly. And sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. I got pretty lucky. I transitioned into logistics in the second half of my Air Force career, and because I was in logistics, I was deploying people, right? And so I got to know a lot of different people and what they do and what their jobs are, and So I think I talked him out of joining the Army, but we'll see.
And Bobby was Navy, is that right?
Bobby was Navy, yep.
Navy, yeah. What was he, do you know what he was doing in the Navy?
He was a nuclear engineer.
Electronics tech.
A nuclear electronics tech, yep.
Wow, that's
wild. Which is what my son is. Not nuclear, but he's an electronics tech on the Eisenhower.
That's cool.
Yeah, and anytime you throw the N-word around, I need to specify, I realize we're on a podcast. Anytime you say the word nuclear, the other N-word, it's there's security clearances. There's a ton of stuff that goes into like just being certified. Like I had to load, I loaded them on B-52s. And so it's just a different kind of security clearance. You have to do, like I had to do this, this training talking about like, do I have a moral obligation to working with nuclear weapons, knowing that we may, you know, drop one on a bad guy one day. And so like, you've got to do all like this moral and there's anytime you use the word nuclear in a job, there's always going to be a pretty stringent requirement.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's so pertinent to like the movie Oppenheimer coming out, and you just see that you keep hearing the quote over and over again that like, you know, I don't know if we can, you can trust us with this power, but we know we can't trust the Nazis. You know, like it's that whole like moral, like, is this right? Is this wrong? What we're doing? And of course, that's like, anytime you decide to go into the military, you're taking that decision making into your own hands, and you're, you know, moving forward with it. And that's, you know, it takes a very like special person to be able to do that, and to do that selflessly, hopefully for his country or their country, you know. And so I have all the respect in the world for military all around the world, people who are, you know, willing to put their life on the line for their country. It's important.
Fun fact, my wife works on the nuclear weapons team at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory.
Does she really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she does.
That's awesome.
And she has top secret clearance. Yep. Because she works on the nuclear weapons team.
Yeah, she's got the top secret SCI. Yep. That's interesting. I always told everybody that the most satisfying part of my job when I was a weapons guy was loading a jet up full with bombs and watching it come back empty. It was
because they fell off because you didn't put them on right.
Correct. That's exactly what happened. Whoopsies.
They just went around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, well, we were in Shreveport, Louisiana when nobody misses anything over there. It's fine.
Right. The Gulf around Shreveport has got a lot of ordnance in it.
Sure. Yeah, no, but watching the jet. So we did the world's longest sortie, and so it was like 36 and a half hours or something like that, and we loaded a B-52 up with 45 bombs, and it took off out of Shreveport, Louisiana, hit tankers all the way to Afghanistan, dropped 45 bombs in Afghanistan, and then flew back. And landed in Louisiana. That's a long trip.
I didn't even know they had that much fuel.
They don't. They hit fuel. They hit tankers.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Midair stuff.
Yeah. But the B-52 keeps fuel in the wings. So when you watch a B-52 fly, it's a goofy ass looking plane. when you watch it fly, its wings flap.
Yeah, right.
It really does, because it's a really skinny fuselage, and it's got these really, really wide wings, and so the wings actually flap, which is it looks like it's going to fall off, and you know what, it might. They were made in 1952, like they were.
Jesus, wild. Two things before we go. Dusty brought up Oppenheimer. They shot most of that in IMAX 75mm, and they're projecting 75mm. I think if you look up on the website, you can go see that it projected, and I think it's like 15 spots in the U.S. So if you're lucky enough and you're interested enough, go see it on that, because projected 75mm is like seeing 10K.
Well,
like barely any theaters even project 4K. So if you can imagine seeing it in the biggest screen possible, projected at 10K, I mean, there is nothing like that.
I'm in Dallas, so they may have that.
They might. It's supposed to be spectacular. So if you're going to see it in that if you can.
They must have one in the Bay Area.
How would you? What do you search for? Theaters projecting in?
Yeah, there's a bunch of articles about it. I would go.
Okay.
How to see it in true IMAX? Like, look for true. Gotcha. I mean, every theater nowadays like has IMAX on it, but they're not really. You know, it's just like a labeling, like a thing now. Like how your phone will have like something dumb like Adobe Audio. Like, really? My one speaker, my phone has adult, like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, right.
but anyway,
That just got me off topic. And another nice thing, another quote to bookend it, and we can start to talk about wrapping it up. The classic Mr. Rogers quote, like when he was a kid, he'd see scary things in the news when terrible things would happen. His mom would tell him, look for the helpers. You'll always find people helping. So as afraid as you are, or as shit hits the fan, terrible things happen, there's always so many more people willing to help. Yeah, I appreciate you guys. You're helping. Everyone can help. Everyone can buy stickers and help when something goes down. So, we appreciate what you guys are doing.
Yeah, we appreciate you guys. This is why we're helping, right? So it's to create community. It's to create good, safe places for men to talk about mental health and for men to talk about, you know, things of this nature, man. It's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to reach out and talk to people and kind of have these open discussions about, you know, mental health and how it affects people and how, you know, we're all loved and there's, we all want you around, you know.
And you know, that's one of the things that I think we or at least myself, I strive for as a teacher and as a YouTube content creator. Like, I try to kind of, you know, comment back and be positive and put that out there, because you never know when just that little bit of positivity and a little bit of openness is going to make a difference for some people. So I just want to, like, you know, reach out to the listeners and anyone who's listening. If anyone is having that an issue where you need to talk to somebody, like, you can always send me a message. You can always DM me through Instagram, and, you know, the whole community, the Knife Mate community, and Dennis and Chad and Devin, we're all really there because, like, we're part of this community and we've all learned from each other and we're all there to help. So, you know, there's always someone who's willing to listen. You know, I'm always willing to listen, always willing to, like, give some advice. And I try to help people when I can. So, you know, please make sure that if someone who's listening is feeling that way, reach out. I'm happy to talk and happy to give some advice or just talk. And, you know, like you said, Chad, you know, when you were talking, to Paxton, you know, it's like in that moment, you know, you didn't know, but he needed that lighthearted reaction to his injury. And then it wasn't like, it's hard to compare two things, right? You're not comparing the loss of a finger to, like, someone taking their life, but you never know where it's going to go, right? So there was always just something there, that positivity that people latch on to.
Yeah. And if you take anything away, always make inappropriate jokes.
Right. Right, exactly. Yeah. That makes everybody smile.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. All right. Well, Chad, what's how can people find you and find more about, like, what you do as well as a knife maker?
Yeah, sure. So Summon and See Smithing is my Instagram. I'm awful about posting. It's a goal that I have this year, and damn it, I'm gonna start doing better. Big projects I've got coming up. I'm doing the Josh Weston Dragonforge experience here in Texas. So I get to dress up in a kilt and teach people how to hammer little railroad spike knives. And I'm going to be doing that for 8 weekends.
Nice.
It's going to be really cool. And if you haven't looked it up, the Dragonforge experience is awesome. Josh Weston built these dragons. The very first one was made with like HVAC sheet metal. But they look like dragons, and the forge is in the mouth of the dragons. It's super, super cool. They look like real dragons. They're awesome. And so
I get to be a character. I just saw his stuff recently. That's awesome.
Dude, it's so cool. He's such a cool guy. And I think, honestly, I think it's going to be a net zero for me. I think I'm going to spend just as much money, you know, getting down, because it's like 3 hours from me. And we're camping every night, but, like, it's, for me, it's part of it is because I want to make more content. Part of it is, you know, I try to find stuff like this that I can sink my teeth into and force me to do that, because I'm just so bad about it. And so I wanna that's my big push this year. So to kind of do that. So and then I've got a little TikTok channel, and like you noticed, I just started a YouTube channel like last week. I posted a reel, which I'm real proud of. Yeah, but
a short.
Yeah, exactly. That's all. That's all I have so far, but it's you know, we're gonna get there. I'm gonna do Dennis's challenge here for the
nice for the YouTube knife maker challenge.
For the YouTube knife maker challenge, yeah.
Heck yeah, awesome, yeah. Nice. All right, Dennis, let everybody know where they can find you.
Oh, Tyrell Knife Works on all platforms, well, except TikTok, because I don't like TikTok. But yeah, and thank you for the plug on the Knife Maker Challenge, which will start roughly next week. Stay tuned for more info. Yeah. I know Dustin, well, and Devin's going to be recording, I'm sure, is going to be part of it. So,
yep.
Hell
this
yeah.
This one's going to be epic. I can't wait to see the weapons that come out of this one, the viewer comments. I think it's all going to be quite interesting.
It's gonna be a lot of fun. And I only do kitchen knives, so I'm making a tuna sword, but some of these guys, I was watching some of the on the last one, the chopper challenge, I was watching some of the users. They're making some incredible stuff.
Wild.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing how many people like just the talent in general. It's just crazy when I see people making things. I'm like, geez, how many people can out here can be so talented? It's crazy. It's great. I love it.
And I got a couple of months to work on it, so we should see some good stuff. So I'm excited.
Yeah, man. Nice. Yeah, I was just thinking, just kind of. I had an idea for what I'm going to do. So I was kind of working through it today and just kind of working out a few little drawings of what I want to do. So I don't talk about it too much.
Sneak peeky. Yeah. What are we doing?
Yeah. So I'll just say it'll be kind of bushcrafty. Okay, I want to go something that like works with my, you know, my channel and what things that I like. So that's,
yeah, picture brand for sure.
So yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully we don't see like 25 Tontos and Wakizashis.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's, I mean, It's hard because YouTube loves samurai swords. Like, if you do something with a samurai sword, you're like almost guaranteed to get good views on it. So it's hard, but that's not an easy thing to make.
Yeah, good, like, good views and shitty comments.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's all right. The algorithm doesn't know what a shitty comment is.
Absolutely. It's all not. Comments. Yeah, it's all engagement.
I can't wait to read the comments. That's going to be the best part.
Right on. We should have a comment contest.
Yeah, right. All right, everybody. Well, thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you, Chad and Dennis, for hanging out with us. For some reason, it looks like we just lost Devin, but we're right at the end anyway. So just to let everybody know, please make sure you take a look at Dennis's channel, take a look at everybody's Instagram, go to Bob Rankin's page, so bobrankincustomknives.com, and you can get the stickers there to support the Project 22, and get a chance to, if you buy that sticker, get a chance to win those knives from Dennis and Chad. It's awesome. You guys can also head over to YouTube and find the Art of Craftsmanship there, and subscribe and let us know what you think. Check out our videos. We just, like I said, we just did a Blade Show video, so that one came up, and I just made my first actual YouTube short the other day, doing forging a little spoon out, so that was kind of cool.
I saw that. That looked really good.
Yeah, thanks. That was a fun little project, and I was like, I was working in the shop, and then I was about to just come upstairs and see what my daughter was up to, and I kind of walked by my smithy, and I had this idea to make this little sugar spoon that's going to go into a sugar bowl that I made, and I'm going to do a top to it, and I was like, yeah, let me just heat up the forge. I'll just turn the forge on. I'll throw something in there and I'll kind of play around and see what I can do. And so I was like, well, while I'm at it, I might as well shoot. I'll try to build a short specifically, because like, I knew that Devin and I are doing a video on a laser etcher, but that's not going to happen until like another 2 weeks. So I was like, well, let me get something up. And so I just like did that and I put it together, and it actually turned out pretty good, and I'm getting decent views on it. So that's like, it's kind of cool. And it wasn't super hard to do, which is cool. But yeah, so you can check that out, and then both you can follow Devin and I on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship and The Art of Camera Guy to see what's going on behind the scenes. And yeah, that's all. Devin, are you back? Did he make it back?
I'm back.
He's not. Hello. No, he's back. Okay. All right. Well, we're just wrapping it up. So once again,
yep.
Thanks, guys. Dennis and Chad, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. It was a blast. And for everybody else, thank you guys all for listening, and we will talk to you next.
Always a pleasure.
Have a good one, guys. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey there.
Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.